And here's a quote from the week. I've never before seen the press take sides like they did this year, openly and even gleefully bad-mouthing candidates who did not meet with their approval. So said Donald Trump. Well, good guess. That's been his battle cry. But those are actually the words of the self-proclaimed liberal Democrat Thomas Frank, who's written a scathing new takedown of the media, which he says was stacked against Bernie Sanders. It's a takedown of the Democratic Party as well. His cover story for Harper's Magazine is SWAT Team, the Media's Extermination of Bernie Sanders and Real Reform, in which he does an analysis of the Washington Post and finds a 5-to-1 number of negative editorials and opinion pieces about Sanders compared to Clinton. Thomas Frank is a contributing editor at Harper's. He joins us from Washington. And so, Thomas, does it follow that you agree with Donald Trump that the liberal media is rigged?
Well, I think that's the wrong word for it. So I've been writing about the sort of the conservative critique of the media for, well, decades. Mm-hmm. So I never took it seriously. I always thought it was, so much rubbish. But what is fascinating about what happened to Bernie Sanders is, first of all, that there was something there. How strange is it that an op-ed page of a liberal newspaper like the Washington Post would be so slanted against the guy? And second of all, that it's not liberal media bias. Sanders was more liberal than his opponent, Hillary Clinton. So this is not even bias, really. I mean, this is the opinion page that I'm talking about. When people write about media bias, it's people trying to read all sorts of meaning into suggestions having to do with straight news stories. And that's not what I'm studying here.
Well, give us your body of evidence. You focused on the Washington Post editorial board and opinion page writers. As you write, the House organ for the meritocracy, or at least people who think they are where they are on merit. And talk more about that and how that reflects something for you.
Well, specifically the D.C. meritocracy. It is really the House Journal of, what would you say, the consensus here in Washington, D.C. This is how I've always been fascinated my entire career about how consensus gets defined and how consensus gets enforced.
Well, it's also, as you write, the gallant defender of a free press, the bold bringer down of presidents.
Yeah, that's right. No, I'm referring to their glory days there, of course, in the 1970s, when they were, the sort of heroic era of the Washington Post, when Ben Bradley was the editor and they were breaking all the Watergate
stories.
So
what are
you
saying now? Are you saying the same thing that Donald Trump is saying, that they are too close to the other members of the meritocracy in Washington, D.C., that they are not – are they blinded?
First of all, I don't really like to it makes me really uncomfortable to say that I'm mimicking anything that Donald Trump is saying.
Well,
I don't think Donald Trump would ever actually sit down and do the work that I've done here. You know what I'm saying?
Well, but you seem to be coming to the same conclusion, so that's what we're trying to get at.
Oh, well, there's no doubt about – I mean, I present the evidence in the story. There's absolutely no question about what I found.
That the
opinion pages of the Post ran five stories against Sanders for every one that they ran in favor of him.
And some with headlines like there's
– Yeah, the headlines are the best, by the way. This one ran either the day before they declared Hillary the winner of the Democratic primary or the day of. And the headline is, "Enough with Bernie Sanders."
Well, here's another one. Nominating Sanders would be insane. Here's another. The paper's editorial board chimed in with a campaign full of fiction about Sanders' campaign. Level with us, Mr. Sanders. The list goes on. Why?
Yeah.
Why do you think this happened?
You know, there's a bunch of different reasons. Let's get back to the idea of the consensus and how you define a consensus and how you enforce a consensus. And clearly what they're doing with this sort of endless rolling barrage of attacks against Bernie Sanders was ruling his ideas outside of the parameters of the acceptable. Right. And that's what they're doing. And that is a typical operation, by the way, of professionalism. And this is a word that comes up again and again, both in my story and also in the Washington Post's coverage of politics. What I'm talking about here is basic class solidarity. OK, these are members of a class who are they see one of the candidates as being a peer, a colleague, someone very much like themselves, someone from their same world. And other candidates as being outsiders that can't be admitted to the inner circle.
Right. Well, and Clinton obviously is in the first category, a lawyer, somebody who rubs shoulders with people who have the same concerns about every issue from the environment to foreign policy, as you put it. But Sanders, you say, and his political revolution, you believe that these same people see something, not just in the Democratic Party, but as reflected in the Washington Post, see something kind of horrifying, a throwback to the low-rent Democratic politics of many decades ago. He may refer to himself as a progressive, but to the affluent white-collar class, he's a regression to a time when demagogues in rumpled jackets pandered to vulgar public prejudices against banks and capitalists and foreign factory owners. Ugh.
Yeah. That's exactly right, though. That is, that's when you read, you know, whatever, 200 of these things, that's like, that is the sort of vision that you come up with. It's Huey Long, you know, that they're dealing with here. It's the transformation of the Democratic Party itself.
Right.
In the last 40 years, okay, since the late 60s, since the early 70s, when the Democratic Party essentially decided that they were no longer going to be the party of labor and working people, and that they were instead going to be the party of the same group that we're talking about here, the sort of affluent white-collar class. And this is not reading between the lines or coming up with an innovative interpretation or something. This, they say this, okay? That's who the Democratic Party is, and Bernie Sanders really is outside of the, you know, the parameters of this is not what the Democratic Party is anymore. In that sense, he is this kind of throwback to a, you know, a regression to a sort of pre-Clinton, pre-Bill Clinton, I should say, Democratic Party.
Yeah. Isn't it possible, though, that many of the voices in the Washington Post really did feel that Bernie Sanders had no way to pay for free college or free, you know, health care for all?
They thought that. Yeah. No doubt. I mean, they wrote it. I assume they thought it.
Right. It's just confusing because – so you come at this from the liberal side and say the Washington Post derided your candidate and you free to say that, your candidate, Bernie Sanders.
Well, I mean, I voted for him, yeah.
Yeah. People on the right say that organs like the Washington Post, especially the Washington Post, which Donald Trump has had several run-ins, unfairly attack their candidate. Isn't it the same argument?
Well, I would say it's not the same argument. I have never heard anyone make the argument about the professional class that I make, and I've never heard anyone try to link it to the put it in the context of the decline of newspapers, which I spend a great deal of time doing.
Well, do that now.
You know, when punditry sort of began, and it's the salad days of punditry in the 1980s and the 1990s, it was clearly linked to to newspapers. The great overarching number one fact about newspapers from that day to this is their decline, if not the end of the world for these organizations, And so how do you understand a newspaper, or pundits, I should say, sort of taking the side of – I'll give you an example. One of the editorials or the op-eds that I point out in the Washington Post is one saying that we shouldn't criticize Wall Street bailouts. Now, think about that in the context of the demise of newspapering. Why would a dying industry, why would representatives of a dying industry like newspapers say that we should, never under any circumstances criticize the bailout of Wall Street?
Yeah. Their point was that TARP worked and it was better than nothing. And
their point is, easily brushed aside by anyone who knows anything about it. So the question is, why would anybody feel that way? And this is what is fascinating about the pundit corps, is that it has come completely dissociated, I think, from your sort of average workaday newspaper journalist. I mean, these are the latter, your average workaday newspaper journalist. These are people whose trajectories are going downward, not upward. These are people who are losing their jobs all over America. And there's, terrible stories out there that you can read. I mean, people that I know who have seen their way of life disappear, crumble before their eyes. And so – but why would the pundits identify upward, identify with Wall Street, say that bank deregulation was a good idea, clearly identifying with the sort of the people at the top rather than their own colleagues.
You make the point that it's because this punditry in particular, we're not talking about people who are covering, three alarm fires and city council meetings in the Midwest. These are people hobnobbing with senators and governors, trading witticisms with friendly cabinet officials. And then as you write in your closing sentence, you start to think a little differently about universal health care and tuition-free college and Wall Street bailouts when your paper goes under.
Yeah, or when you suffer the fate of many people that I know from, you know, spending all these years and working in this field. You lose your job, or they close down the whole operation, or whatever gets canceled, and all of a sudden there you are. There's a sort of larger mystery here, which is why Washington, D.C. in general, I don't really go into this in great length, but why Washington, D.C. in general does not sympathize with, you know, the vast parts of this country. You know, I'm from the Midwest, of course, originally, but why Washington, D.C. doesn't sympathize with what's happening in so much of the rest of the country, how it's able to remain in its little bubble. And that's sort of what I was trying to get at here.
Yeah.
And by the way, I would be astonished if the Trump people ever wrote anything like this. That would amaze me if that were to happen.
Stay tuned. That's Thomas Frank, contributing editor at Harper's Magazine. His article on the Washington Post and its coverage of Bernie Sanders is the cover story of the November issue. His latest book, Listen, Liberal, or Whatever Happened to the Party of the People. Thomas, thank you so much.
Sure thing. It's my pleasure.